Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, everybody. This is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. Well, it's been several weeks since President Trump announced that the United States is recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And to perhaps everyone's surprise, the sky has not fallen and the oceans have not risen and flooded the earth. Most, if not all, the so-called Middle East experts warned us of the terrible things that would happen because of the Trump announcement. So what really happened? Essentially, speaking of the Muslim world and the rest of the world, almost nothing happened. Relatively small demonstrations of a few hundred people took place in Amman, Jordan, London, and Paris. Hundreds also demonstrated in Times Square. There were no protests at all in Cairo, Riyadh, and the Gulf states. One of the possible and probable answers is that the Muslim world has so many problems and so many conflicts in their own areas and in their own countries that there is simply a lack of interest in the Palestinians and their problems. The largest demonstrations took place in Indonesia, which is a Muslim country on the other side of the world. And Indonesia is a relatively peaceful place, and although it has problems that are not on the scale of the problems in the other Muslim countries, so they have time to go out and protest. So I suppose it's a form of leisure activity in Indonesia. No one gets hurt, like what is happening today in Iran. In Iran, demonstrations are taking place in 27 provinces, and the universities have begun to participate as well, which is generally a sign that the regime is in real trouble. Six demonstrators have been killed so far. So I think we can sum up the situation by saying that the Palestinian issue is really not an important one to the Muslim world. It's a phony issue that's used to keep people from thinking and taking action on their own problems. I think that our major problem is with the Europeans, who took issue with Trump's decision because they have a more basic issue. And that more basic issue is called anti-Semitism, which is age old in Europe. It's nothing new. So I will say a few words about all these current events. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back in just a moment.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, this is Jay Shapiro again. Again, thanks for listening. It's been about 2 weeks since President Trump announced that the United States recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And contrary to what many people expected, the sky has not fallen in. What the president did was simply the right move to make. The current U.S. administration has made it clear that it is not changing a longstanding policy, nor is it taking any position on final status issues, including the specific boundaries of Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem. In other words, the American administration is essentially saying that at least some of Jerusalem is obviously Israel's capital. And if Israel decides to give away other parts of Jerusalem, which I hope won't happen, of course, and which probably will not happen, then this doesn't in any way contradict the fact that some, if not all, of Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. The president only stated the obvious, that Jerusalem is and always been the capital of the Jewish people. The proclamation wasn't invented out of thin air, nor did it, a lack of precedent exist to make this official announcement. So I'd like to give a little bit of history, because I think it's important to remember what has brought us to this present point. Here are the facts. In 1995, which is more than 20 years ago, the U.S. Congress passed the Jerusalem Assembly Act by a big partisan majority, and this act recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and required the U.S. to move the embassy to Jerusalem by 1999, almost 20 years ago. What happened was, it gave the president the opportunity to sign a waiver every 6 months, delaying that move if it impacted the national security of the United States. And the current administration deemed this not to be quite the case, because President Trump did once again sign the waiver, but there's no doubt that in the United States, the balance has shifted in favor of this move, judging by the fact that the White House has finally and officially recognized Jerusalem as a capital of Israel, and has formally stated that work would begin to plan the embassy move. I don't know how long this work is going to take, but it is supposed to begin immediately. So I'd like to provide the listeners with a little history. It's good to recall what's brought us to this point. As I said, in 1995, Congress passed the Jerusalem Embassy Act. Every 6 months, the president has signed a waiver. And in 2008, the presidential candidate, Barack Obama, called Jerusalem the capital of Israel. That's when he was a candidate. In 2000, another candidate, George W. Bush, stated that as soon as he was elected, he would begin the process of moving the embassy to Jerusalem. And in 1993, President Bill Clinton made it clear that he supported in principle a move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. So obviously, this all these proclamations by candidates in particular was in order to ensure the Jewish vote. The current administration, the Trump administration, is finally agreeing to the will of Congress and implementing a law that was passed more than 20 years ago. So the United States is essentially supporting its ally, Israel, by stating a fact. Jerusalem is and has always been the capital of the state of Israel and of the Jewish people, as a matter of fact. Now, there's been a backlash to this announcement, and especially in the United Nations against Israel. This backlash against Israel is a reminder, really, of the anti-Semitism that still exists throughout the globe. There were subtle and not so subtle innuendos than these, which clearly remind us, when it comes to Israel, the world expects us to apologize for being Jews, as if as some sort of negative connotation exists in being Jewish. At any rate, President Trump's speech recognizing Jerusalem, Israel's capital, has finally signaled that for America, the century-long Arab attempt to destroy Israel's legitimacy, which is really the essence of the conflict here, this century-long Arab attempt has failed. Trump was subtle. He did not say all of Jerusalem, as I said. The U.S. will support a two-state solution if Israel and the Arabs agree to it, which, of course, will never happen. The boundaries of Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem and the borders of Israel itself are supposed to be left to the parties to resolve. Meanwhile, the Palestinians refuse to sit down and negotiate. So what the president did was he merely started the process of moving the U.S. embassy to Israel. So his speech was pretty balanced. The refusal by other Western countries to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital didn't prevent the Palestinians from hurling rocks from the Al-Aqsa Mosque at Jews worshiping below, stabbing them in the street, which has been going on even before the president's announcement. It's been going on since the founding of the State of Israel and even before. So appeasing those who threaten violence doesn't reduce the violence, it encourages it. The more concessions are offered, the more the Palestinians believe even greater violence will deliver them final victory. That's why the Oslo process, which offered the Palestinian state, led immediately to the Second Intifada. That's why the expulsion of Israeli residents from Gaza back in 2005 led to the all-out rocket onslaught against civilians in southern Israel, which is still continuing to this very day. Because the bottom line is that the cause of Arab and Islamic terrorism is not a political problem or a struggle over land rights. It's a religious fanaticism and incitement, and not the actions of the victims. No matter what the Israelis do, it's not going to change the fact that they're preaching against the Jews and against Israel in the mosques, and for example, the Palestinian Authority education system does the exact same thing. So the purpose of political violence is to make people give up through fear. The reason violence against Israel never stops is that the Arab perpetrators know the West will respond by urging concessions from Israel, who is the victim, and punishing Israel when it refuses to stretch out its throat to the knife. Britain, France, and Germany have once again bowed to the men of violence by disapproval of Trump's speech. If they had said they too would now recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the threat of violence lose much of its point. There was nothing in Trump's speech to preclude the Palestinians from having control over part of Jerusalem in an eventual settlement if they would be willing to sit down and negotiate. Yet, they are trying to incite the Muslim world to violence over Trump's recognition that other parts of Jerusalem constitute Israel's capital. That's because they deny the Jews any rights to Jerusalem or any rights in what they consider part of the Arab homeland, the Muslim homeland. And that's because they need to suppress what they can never admit, that Jerusalem was the capital of a Jews' ancient kingdom, which preceded Islam and the Arab and Muslim conquest by at least 700 years, if not more. The Jews are the only ones for whom Jerusalem is at the core of their religious belief. Trump made a mistake, by the way, when he said Jerusalem was the heart of three great religions. Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran. Muslims pray toward Mecca. They turn their backs to Jerusalem. The holiest city is Mecca. But for Jews, Jerusalem is the Holy of Holies. It is mentioned in the Bible more than 660 times. It is integral to liturgy and forms the direction of all Jewish prayer and historic longing. When we pray three times a day, we face Jerusalem. The Jews are the only people for whom Jerusalem has been the capital of their national homeland. Not for the Christians, with all due respect, and certainly not for the Muslims who turn their backs to Jerusalem when they pray in the direction of Mecca. Far from the Israeli presence being illegal, the Jews are the only people who are entitled to this city as a matter of international law, historical truth, and natural justice, which is why the refusal by Western countries to recognize the unique Jewish right to Jerusalem has been so malevolent. It's not just that this made Israel into a second-class country. could be because they're saying that Israel cannot choose its own capital. Much worse than that, it gave legitimacy to those who wanted to eradicate altogether the Jews' rights to the city and to the land. By their opposition to Trump's speech, the British, French, Germans, and the rest have revealed that, like the Palestinians, they don't think the Jews have the right to any part of Jerusalem at all. I'll say a little bit more about this after the break, because this is a hot agenda item now, and I want to refer a little bit more to it. I'll be right back.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to continue on the subject of the recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital by the Trump administration. There are those who say that Trump's move makes peace less likely. I think that they're wrong, because recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital is the essential step without which peace can never be achieved. Unless it's a peace that is because of surrender or conquest or, God forbid, extermination. Yet that's the capitulation with which the British, the Europeans, and the left in the United States, including much of the Jewish left, they now stand aligned with those who disagree with Trump. And this was seen in the vote in the UN. The fact remains that we shouldn't be relying on Trump or anybody else, any foreign leader, to determine our future and what our capital is. It's up to Israel to determine its own policy and its own red lines. That's what it means to have sovereignty. That's an integral part of sovereignty. No other country in the world at the moment is denied the right to determine where its capital should be except Israel, which is simply wrong. And by the way, just as an aside, this time of the year there's an even more powerful symbol of Jewish ties to Jerusalem, ties that go back for thousands of years. We just finished last week celebrating Hanukkah, which is an eight-day holiday, marks the rededication of the temple in the year 164 before the Common Era. It had been defiled by the Syrian-based Seleucid Greeks during the Hellenistic period, when they tried to impose Greek-oriented culture on the Jewish population. The revolt was led by the Hasmonean priest Mattathias, and he was followed by his son Judah, and it culminated in the purification of the temple, when, according to tradition, it was only a single bottle of uncontaminated olive oil to light the menorah, the candelabra. Jews everywhere, and we saw this last week, Jews everywhere still light an increasing number of candles every night. They give gifts and they eat food in this celebration and commemoration of that joyous event that took place more than 2,000 years ago. In other words, we keep the idea of the temple as being Jewish alive and well, even to this very day, through our actions and through at least our Hanukkah holiday. By the way, it's also true on Yom Kippur. In the afternoon of Yom Kippur, we repeat and discuss the ceremony that the high priest did in the temple on Yom Kippur. So there are many people who want to avoid confrontations, but the international community's failure to recognize and appreciate the transformation of Jerusalem under Israeli control and to honor Israel's choice of its capital was an injustice, and it was finally made right by U.S. President Trump. We believe that the Americans, as represented in Congress and the Jerusalem Act, should not compromise their own beliefs and values in order to appease those who have a long history of using terrorism to further their interests. Because appeasing extremists never works for a lot of reasons. First of all, if you appease extremists, it leads to more extremism by proving that bullying tactics work and they provide an incentive for more violence. It also tends to distract attention from the real issue. The real issue is there are many Muslims who refuse to reconcile themselves to the existence of a Jewish state, of Jewish sovereignty in the Middle East, a part of the world that they consider their own. In other words, they don't want Israel here, nor do they recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital in any borders, no matter what the borders are. Why else would the Palestinians and other Muslims be opposed to international recognition of parts of Jerusalem that would remain part of Israel in any conceivable peace deal? Even if you think there's going to be a two-state solution, part of Jerusalem would, under this two-state solution, belong to the state of Israel. But so what Trump's decision has done is pretty much corrected a long-going injustice. Jerusalem's been the capital of the Jewish people for 3,000 years. It also, by the way, his recognition, Trump's recognition, put an end to the absurdity of relating to Jerusalem as though it were what they call a corpus separatum, a separate body, because in the UN 1947 UN partition plan, there was supposed to be a Jewish state, an Arab state, and a separate body around Jerusalem. But this was 70 years ago. This was before the Palestinians and the Arab nations rejected outright the idea that the land that now makes up Israel could be shared between Jews and Muslims. What they envisioned at that time was a Jerusalem under international control. So sites holy to the Muslims, to the Jews, to the Christians would be respected and developed, and members of all the faiths would be given access and be allowed to worship freely. That was what the UN resolution said in 1947. But a lot has changed. A lot of water has flowed over the dam since then. The Arab nations did not accept the UN resolution. They tried to destroy the Jewish state at its inception. And they left Jordan in control of eastern Jerusalem, the old city, for 19 years. And during that 19 years, between 1948 and the Six-Day War in 1967, Jews were totally banned from the Temple Mount. They were banned from the old city. And all the Jewish and other sites, Jewish sites in the Jewish quarter, were left in ruins and destroyed. And then, when they tried a second attempt in 1967 by the combined armies of Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, supported, by the way, by another eight Arab countries, they tried to destroy Israel. They had a resounding defeat and left Israel in control of a united Jerusalem for the first time in over 2,000 years. So Jerusalem became a free city to protect the religious rights of all the faiths, as actually envisioned by the UN. The capital of Israel, under Israel, the city has flourished as a home, Jewish, Muslim, and Christian. Yet the world, including the United States, continue to relate to Jerusalem as though it were 1947. Finally, what's happened is, 2 weeks ago, a U.S. president gave official recognition to the reality on the ground. Anyone who has visited Jerusalem has seen firsthand how Jerusalem has thrived as Israel's capital, not just for Jews, but for Arabs and for Christians, and for all religions. It is a bustling city where high-tech exists alongside historical sites and has meaning for the great monotheistic faith. I live in Jerusalem myself, and it's a great place. Other than the religious aspects, there's a lot going on here. There are lectures, there's theater, there's music, whatever you want. And it's becoming even more. And there are plans to do other things to make the city more of an international city that's welcoming to everybody. So the international community's failure to recognize and appreciate the transformation of Jerusalem under Israel's control and the failure to honor Israel's choice of its capital was a long-standing injustice that was finally corrected by the U.S. president, and therefore he deserves credit for making a historical move. Incidentally, by the way, I don't want to go into the details because they're sort of funny, and I don't mean to be funny on this program, but you know, the one of the ministers said that they're going to extend the train that runs from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. They're going to extend underground, under the city of Jerusalem. They're going to extend the train to reach under the old city and be near the western wall, near the Temple Mount, the final stop. And a suggestion has come up to name the final stop after President Trump. In other words, under the city of Jerusalem, there would be a train station called Trump, which is okay. I have no problem with that. But what's happened is I saw letters to the editor in the Jerusalem Post from American Jews who say that would be a terrible thing because most American Jews do not like Trump. Now, I don't know how true that is, but the idea, maybe it's the nature of Jews to argue about everything, but now they're going to argue about whether the still unbuilt train station under the old city of Jerusalem should or should not be named after the President of the United States, who corrected an at least 70-year-long mistake by recognizing that Jerusalem is the capital of the Jewish state. The fact that that's become a question of conflict strikes me as rather odd, sort of a historical funny narrative. I'll be back after the break.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I occasionally like to do a segment on this program called Under the Radar, in which I gather news items that I think don't get much public dissemination, but I think they may be of interest to the listeners. So I collect them, and if time permits, I read them or I abstract from them for the listeners. So the first one that I want to talk about this week, I don't know how much I have time to get to the entire pile on my desk, but I want to talk about the fact that the Islamic world's response to Trump's Jerusalem declaration was not at all like was predicted. There was all kind of ominous warnings about the Arab fury characterized by most Arab and Western leaders would have to President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Although, by the way, Trump made a clear statement that the decision in no way jeopardizes final status talks over Jerusalem between Israel and the Palestinians. The Arab League, which is composed of 22 mostly Arabic-speaking states, warned that Trump's announcement deepens tensions, ignites anger, and threatens to plunge the region into more violence and chaos. That's a quote. Hamas was even more graphic. They said Trump's decision would open the gates of hell. But what happened was pretty much nothing. The Israeli authorities braced themselves for a possible conflagration by announcing the dispatch of several battalions of soldiers to the West Bank to augment the forces there. So what happened? By far, strangely enough, the largest, most persistent demonstration took place in Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia. Many people may not realize that Indonesia is the largest Muslim population country in the world, but it's way out in the Pacific Ocean. And so at first glance, the fact that a Muslim population on the other side of the globe staged the largest demonstration appears to confirm that the new media have turned the Islamic world into a global village. It should be recalled, however, that many thousands, rather than the mere hundreds who demonstrated now, did so 50 years ago on the eve of the Six-Day War, calling for Israel's destructions. Millions of people gathered in Cairo before the Six-Day War, when Nasser was the president, calling for Israel's destruction. Now there was almost no response. There were demonstrations, small, I guess, in the hundreds, in Amman, Jordan, in London, England, and in Paris. In each case, the numbers who showed up comprised only a tiny percentage of the city's Muslim populations. By the way, hundreds appear to have demonstrated in Times Square, of all places, although from the photos and the videos, the total seems to have been not much more than 200. And their chants didn't address either Jerusalem or Trump. They were chanting was free, free Palestine from the river to the sea. It was the usual thing. There was the absence of almost any protests in Cairo, Egypt, and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and in the Gulf states. All told, all around the world, a few thousand Muslims protested Trump's declaration, and they were an infinitesimal fraction of the religious community that numbers more than a billion. By the way, ironically, perhaps, one of the capitals to see very little protest was Jerusalem, the subject of the protest. There are over 250,000 Muslims, a quarter of a million Muslims in the Jerusalem area, and yet there were less than a few dozen protesters. In the southern outskirts of Ramallah, which is north of Jerusalem, it's the capital of the Palestinian Authority, there were not only more protesters, they were far more violent. Yet that was to be expected, because the Palestinian Authority had encouraged violence, and many of the protesters were being paid for their efforts by Fatah, which is the movement led by Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, who's now in the 11th year of his four-year term. This initiative is perhaps reflected in the fact that whereas the protests in Jerusalem were attended by men and women in all ages, the protesters closer to Jerusalem in a crossing point called Kalandia, they were mostly, if not all, young males, and they were presumably getting paid to do so. Also, that means that they didn't have work to do. The only work they have is protesting. So, in neither case did the demonstrations represent much deviation from the norm. And these protests were smaller than the average protests that take place in the Jerusalem area other times of the year. They were far less intense, for example, than the protests that broke out back in July over the Israeli decision to place electronic monitors at the entrance to the Temple Mount following the killing of two Israeli border policemen by assailants who began their attack from the Temple Mount. Only along the security fence with Gaza did the protests turn a little bit lethal. Again, the number of protesters was small, and those killed was even smaller, of course. This is not surprising. The protesters knew beforehand if they get close to the border fence, they might it might have lethal consequences. And the Israeli troops manning the fence were aware of the possibility that some of the protesters might be suicide bombers and that thousands might attempt to crash the fence. So Israel has had to establish deterrence to prevent these phenomena because these things have taken place in the past. So the question to be asked is, why did all these dire warnings about the rising of the Arabs because of Trump's decision, why did all these forebodings come to nothing? The answer may be preceded by acknowledging that after at least half a century of studying why people rebel, no one knows exactly why political tumult erupts. It's been pointed out by some scholars that most professional revolutionaries are usually surprised as everyone else when a revolution actually breaks out. In this particular instance, an attempt to explain the relative lack of popular reaction to Trump's decision has to distinguish between the publics outside Israel and the Palestinian Authority and those within. For example, in the Muslim world, the burdens of so many problems and political conflicts close to home partially explain the lack of interest in the Jerusalem question. Just this week, for example, as I'm making this broadcast, there are violent things going on in Iran. The Iranians have been under the Ayatollahs since 1979. And now it seems that some kind of revolution is going on, and when you're involved in something like that, you don't have time to worry about Jerusalem. So following the logic, the fact that the protest did place as far away as Jakarta in Indonesia might reflect the relative peace and prosperity prevailing in Indonesia. In other words, those in Indonesia are happy with their lot, and therefore they have time to demonstrate against what happened in Jerusalem. Many, if not most, of the other Muslim countries, they're so caught up in their own problems that the idea of demonstrating about Jerusalem is the farthest thing from their minds. They have their own problems. So, by the way, little took place in Israel and Gaza might be explained by a similar fatigue, but also by other factors. First of all, there's a dampening effect of their two rival forces, Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, and they're struggling for power, and that keeps them busy. So, both of these groups, the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, urge ordinary Palestinians to take risks without committing their bureaucracies themselves and the security force. In other words, the guys at the top are not interested in endangering their position by getting involved in violence. They send others to do it. And the Palestinian Authority, by the way, apparently, according to research, is a lack of organizers who can get protesters and assure both the replenishment of the ranks and the continuity of violence, which they also pay for. So they might be save their money now and not spend it on useless violence. Finally, and probably the most important point of all, the protesters face a very innovative Israeli force. One of the innovations that Israel is using is to abstain from confronting the protesters, but rather to contain them, identify them, and have various ways of doing this. And then, after the protest is over, when things quiet down, they then go and apprehend the protesters. They don't face them while they're protesting. So the people who might protest know that a price will be paid for violence, and that acts as a very strong deterrent from violently protesting in the first place, no matter what the subject is that they might be paid to protest. So it turns out that all the predictions were wrong about the response to President Trump's announcement of recognition of Jerusalem. And thank God, and I say this as far as all sides are concerned, thank God there was less violence, less people were injured, many fewer people were killed, and that's good. It really is good. On North sides. Anyhow, that's the situation right now. And until next week, Jay Shapiro, take care of yourselves. Let's hope that we have a quiet week.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.